Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Canine Mind Freak episode brought to you by Canines on Duty. I am Brian, and today with me we have Felipe Sanz, a.k.a. nicknamed Mountain, deemed by other people in the canine world, right?
Yeah.
So Felipe was a staff sergeant in the Marine Corps, and currently, Mountain, you own a company called Parabellum Canine out of Virginia. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so I was originally born in Brazil. Moved to Florida when I was young, and then kind of ended up all up and down the East Coast. Joined the Marine Corps after a couple years of college. I was an infantry guy, so, you know, did 5 tours to Iraq and Afghanistan. My last 2 to Afghan is where we had the IDD dogs from the TED program, so we were running labs for route clearance and things like that, and that's kind of where everything started for me. And got out of the Marine Corps and then just kind of pursued the dog trade. And so from there, you know, I was very lucky and fortunate to meet some pretty good people in the industry, very open-minded people that kind of took me under their wings and showed me, you know, the do's and don'ts of the road. And thankfully it's kind of, I feel spoken for itself within the dogs that I've trained as well. You know, and that was pretty much it. Fell in love and did what everybody does that loves working dogs, try to make a living out of it. So I actually brought a good friend on board. His name's Don Miller. We served in Afghanistan together. He's the other owner of Parabellum. And he's the business mind of everything. So he keeps me on an even keel and makes sure the lights stay on while I get to stay a dog all day. So
now, if you could give a shout out to one mentor that you had, who would that be?
Oh man, I would have to say it's Jacob Robinson for sure.
Jacob Robinson, yeah.
Yeah, Jacob Robinson. He was a MARSOC handler for a while and worked at Von Lick for Kenny for a while. And now he's a master trainer for one of the SFGs out there. And he's a passionate dude. And the thing that I love about him is he loves to share that passion. So if you show genuine interest of like, hey man, I want to learn how to do this, he gives you 110%. But if you're kind of one of those dudes that's just like, I just want to learn it because it's cool, you know what I mean? He's like, all right, we'll go scrape shit in the kennels for a year, and then we'll talk and see if you really want to do this. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I attribute a lot of my, I mean, I'm 34 years old. I've been doing this for the better part of a decade. And, you know, I still like, if I have an issue with the dog, I tape it, and I send it to Daddy Jake. And I'm like, hey, Dad, what am I doing wrong? You know, so he's good.
That's
people
awesome.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. So today's topic is all about advice etiquette. So how Mountain and I met was I posted a comment on another trainer, posted a video, and they were doing civil work, and they were getting extremely close. The dog was chomping just inches from his face. And I posed a legitimate question. Does the distance matter, or is this the desire to get that close, is it driven by ego? And Mountain here posted a rebuttal, and really what it was is we weren't understanding each other in the beginning.
Right.
And
absolutely.
Then we talked, I asked you to call me, we talked on the phone, and that's, dude, I was really inspired by your mindset and how you thought about people's opinions and advice. And so that's why I wanted to have this interview today, because I think it's an important topic. You know,
absolutely.
As well as I do, there's, what's that joke that's going around Facebook about trainers that if you have 3 trainers in a room,
oh, yeah.
2 of them agree that the third one's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something, some trash like that.
Right.
I think it's ridiculous because for me, I really want to hear your opinion too, but it's almost like religion. If we all believe in the same God, why is there so many different ideas? Now, granted, in the canine industry, shouldn't we have a lot of different tools in our toolbox? I think that there's so many people that have just closed ear to advice based on some of the things that we're going to dive into, like confirmation bias and behavioral confirmation and self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm going to read out of my psychology book when we get to that part, but really want to hear a little bit from you, because you really had some inspiring things to say when you and I had talked. So let's first start off with what do you feel is important as trainers and handlers and decoys and even pet dog owners post on other trainers' stuff? Like, what's one of your biggest pet peeves?
Nobody cares what you think, to be honest. Like, you know what I mean? If somebody's posting something, unless it's advertised and branded as an educational video, right? And then you have questions about that piece of education or what they're training the dog and how they're marking behaviors and rewarding or punishing or using the quadrants or whatever else, like make it be educational, not just, you know, what it is now, which is like you said, a giant like ego contest. Well, what you're doing is wrong. We haven't done it that way since 75 and it needs to be this way now, or, you know, he's just trying to show off for likes, or it's clickbait, or blah, 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 blah. You know, a lot of the stuff that gets put on social media is for what? It's for likes. It's for entertainment, right? There's very few videos out there, unless it's advertised as an online seminar, that are going to be from soup to nuts, the completion of training a single behavior, let alone chaining complex behaviors together. Right. So, you know, the idea that everybody thinks they're right and their way is the only way instantly tells me that, well, you're not really worth your weight in salt as a trainer, because just in life in general, regardless of dog training, if you show me one way to drive a stick shift, you know, I'm sure Mario Andretti is probably going to teach me a different way that is probably better than your way, but I have to start somewhere and I have to grow and learn. So I'm not going to be shut off to anybody's opinion. And even if it's something that I know in my heart of hearts is wrong and dumb and possibly harmful or whatever, at least I've learned and confirmed a way not to do things. So yeah. I remember literally growing up as a dog trainer, I went to a behavior modification seminar to somebody that was really, really well respected for behavior modification. And just like anything in the dog world, you've got his fan group and then you've got everybody that just hates him and thinks he's the worst person that ever touched a leash. But anyways, I went to this seminar. It was my first real seminar as a dog trainer. And sitting there, as he's working through these different aggression cases and these different types of aggression, the things that he were doing were things that I have already kind of like learned on my own or learned through other trainers that I was working with. And it was a confirmation of, hey, I feel like I'm on the right track. And to me, that was still worth all the money that I paid to go. Because as a young trainer, like, how do you really have confirmation in a industry that's so ill-regulated as dog training is? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when it comes to social media, it's social media. Just fucking leave it at social media. Mm-hmm. Now, if you spend $10,000 to go to a 1-week seminar and all you learn to do is push a button and spin a dial, like, yeah, maybe you should have some words with the dude that just took all your money and, you know what I mean? And right. ran you for a scam. But I get tired of the fact. And the other thing is too, is like we talked about previous, I'm in dog training because I would prefer to spend my time with dogs than with other human beings, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, I feel like a lot of what we all enjoy is that passion communication of trying to figure out how to communicate with something that you can't talk to, right. and how that works and so on and so forth. So shouldn't it all be about the dog to begin with, not about what you think and how you feel? And, you know, if we're all here for the same reason, whether it's to title a dog or whether it's to make a dog that's going to bring home an officer at the end of the day, or, you know, keep Marines safe overseas, or whether it's a service dog that's going to help better somebody's standard of living. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Shouldn't we all be there about the dog and the success of that dog for its particular job versus, yeah. Well, you know, he's bald and got tattoos, so, I mean, he's just an egotistical bastard, or he gets too close on the table, or why is he not requiring the dog to sit as a you know, terminal command or a terminal behavior for the detection or whatever the case, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So well, that's kind of where I'm at with it, man.
Sure. Well, and I'm a believer. And if any of you out there have seen my past videos, I'm all about putting as many tools in your toolbox as you can, because like humans, dogs have different personalities. So one technique is not going to work for every dog. So why not open your mind? And most recently, there's been a lot of controversy over what's more important, experience or science. And we talked about this in the pre-interview a little bit. So I kind of want to share some of my thoughts with that. Is that cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So here's the deal. When you look at science, you know, I'm studying to be a scientist. I'm studying psychology, cognitive psychology. And one of the things that I learned in my experimental class is that here's your hypotheses. Here's how I'm going to do my experiment. Then that has to go before a review board, because they're going to check for ethics. They're going to make sure that your outliers are correct. Like what's due to chance. They're going to look at all the different variables, whether or not you're going to have confederates. And I know that might sound like gibberish to some people, but my point is it's very complex. And there's people monitoring this that are saying, oh, you missed this because this is a variable you didn't consider.
Right. So
then when you say, there's a lot of people that said, no, experience is way better. Well, I argue and say, no, I think science is better because now we know I'm specifically looking at this. Here's all the variables that could modify this one thing. And then you log it. Now you have a history. And then you do that. The minimum sample size for any experiment to be legit is 30.
Yeah.
So, you know, 30 or more dogs. I've done this on, and 90% of the time, when I modified this variable, this is what I got. So how many people are actually doing that with their own experiences? Are you taking your ideas to a scientific review board and doing? So no. And within people's experiences, there's a lot of variables. So for example, this is an interesting one. And again, this is out of my social psychology book, behavioral confirmation. This is the book definition is this. It's a tendency for perceivers. So like if I'm perceiving you and I think you're a boring person, to behave as if their experience expectations are correct, and the targets then respond in a way that confirms the perceiver's beliefs. So if I believe you're boring, then I'm not going to let you talk through this entire thing. You're going to sit there like a bump on the log. You're going to get discouraged, and therefore you're going to come across as if you're boring. But it's really my behavior that's triggering your behavior.
Right.
Right. And so what we found is we found that this is true in dogs. When we behave a specific way, the dog will modify their behavior. In fact, the Department of Psychology at the University of Florida says that dogs modify their behavior in regards to the intentional state of the human mind.
Yeah, and it's funny as you say that. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, like, go for it.
I literally just had a dog I trained as a service dog for a veteran that has a lot of PTSD and some other issues. Mm-hmm. But I've found, you know, and I've trained service dogs for people with, you know, MS or, you know, other conditions. And I find that one of the hardest dogs to maintain are those that are going to people with psychological ailments, anxiety, depression, because they project and manifest so much of that onto their dog that their dog starts to then mirror those behaviors and be extremely anxious and not be able to have any stability or duration in their commands because of their lack of, you know, handling or whatever else, but they're projecting themselves onto the dog. And going back to kind of what you're saying about experience versus science, I think experience is the poor man's science, right? Because if I do the scientific method and I, you know, articulate, hey, this is what I think, this is how I'm going to prove that, these are the variables, this is the control group, yada, 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 and then I submit that for review and I have, you know, arbitrary third parties saying, well, I'm familiar with the scientific method, this doesn't fit, you haven't accounted for this, okay, cool, go back, make a rough draft. And you do all of that before you actually, you know, put the first dog in the Skinner box and start clicking or ringing a bell and putting out food, right? Now, experience is just the lack of all of those controls. It's just, all right, trial and tribulation. Well, I did that. This dog sucks. It doesn't work. Okay, get the next dog. All right, well, we're going to try to change for this dog what didn't work for that dog, even though this dog is a completely different dog. Right. You know what I mean? And so you build it that way. And I think those that say experience over science don't even realize, like, well, experience is science. Mm-hmm. You are taking these anomalies or these baselines and manipulating them how you need to try to work for the next dog because you don't want to make the same mistakes as you did previously, or you don't want to create the same, you know, anxiety on the out where the dog just frantically starts chewing even more because you said los or whatever else. Mm-hmm. Cause maybe that wasn't a compulsion dog, you know, maybe that was a two ball dog or whatever have you. So, I would argue that experience is the poor man's science. And if you can't necessarily acknowledge that, I think you're doing yourself a disservice.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the other things to look at, and I think this is what some people are failing to see, is that we only use our conscious mind, according to neuroscientists, only 2-4% of our existence. So 96-98% of the time, we're on subconscious autopilot. So how in the world can you be open to seeing the different variables? For example, your own behavior. Isn't body language subconscious? So you're saying, well, this technique works. This is what I argue. How come one technique, one specific technique that works for a trainer, when they teach it to other people, how come it only works for the trainer? That's because there are things going on that you're not aware of. Most trainers instinctively, or because of their repetition of dealing with dogs, they've learned how to behave. So it's become subconscious. So, right. You know, they're staying calm. They know, okay, I need a calm personality. So then they do this technique. Maybe it's a quick, you know, sudden pulse with the leash.
Right.
And, but they do it with a calm personality. So then the dog doesn't feel the need to redirect on them. But then you teach that exact same technique to someone else, or you argue that this technique works for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, no, not necessarily, because there's a lot more going on in the human even. And we talked about that in the pre-interview was like the emotional contagion and social referencing. Dogs learning and modifying their behavior based on how we're behaving. So, and you brought up a good point too. You mentioned that when you're training dogs for people that have psychological disorders, that there's some bad behaviors because of how the people are acting. Now imagine if you posted a video of the dog interacting with their handler and they're not doing what they were trained to do. Imagine all the people that would say, well, you as a trainer, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, you did this wrong. But what they're failing to realize that maybe you did a phenomenal job at training the dog. Maybe it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the new handler. That's the hard part in this business, I believe. It's not about training the dog. That part can be fairly easy if we have the right knowledge. But it's teaching another human being how to act and behave around the dog. That's the hard part.
And you know, what's funny is, like, even though we're the ones with all of this knowledge and we know how to do this with a dog and how to do that with the dog as trainers, I find that dog moms, the Karens out there, right? When I go to do a turnover with a pet dog client, they understand and acknowledge 10 times more, like, holy crap, you've got to train me a lot more than you've got to train your dog. Or they'll make, you know, funny comments of like, man, I must be more difficult than my dog was to train and stuff like that. Where, like you said, they jump on this assumption of, okay, 6 months down the line, if the dog's gone back to acting like a jerk, they think, oh, well, Mountain did a horrible job training that dog, versus what kind of job did I do on educating that client? And even if I did a perfect job, it's still up to that client to, you know, use everything that I've taught them and to do it appropriately. And so you're asking me to basically take my years of experience and how I conduct myself with that dog, understanding that proprioception is huge for that dog, and convey that to somebody in an hour, two, five, six, whatever it is during a turnover, you know what I mean? And that expectation is ridiculous. But that's also why, you know, we check up with those clients. Hey, how are things going? Oh, you're still not getting this? You're still having issues walking around the block? Cool. Well, we'll come out this week and we'll go on a walk with you and your dog. And you're going to work the dog. I'm not touching it. I want to see how you work with the dog. And then I'll call you out on all the stuff. And then we'll stop. We'll correct some things. We'll go another 100 yards. If you're still messed up, we'll stop again. And it's an education, teaching a non-handler, non-trainer, a regular client, you know, to me is 100 times easier than going into somebody that maybe knows as much or a little, like, around the same, you know, knowledge base as you, and trying to get them to bring down those egotistical walls and just listen for a second. Right. Even if your dog is literally proving to them, hey, I can say out and my dog spits it out or hands it to me and looks happy and there's no conflict and you're having all this issue with your dog, why wouldn't you at least want to listen to what I have to say? It may not even apply to your dog, but at least it's a tool so you know, like, hey, with this type of dog, this is how it works. Instead of, no, my dog, he's too much of a beast. You know, like, you gotta be harder on him. Or, you know, oh, my dog can't handle that correction. You'll shut it down. You know, like, just relax. Let it happen. Communicate. Try things. You know what I mean?
And you just hit the nail on the head on what I read with behavioral confirmation. We behave as we believe. So if you believe your dog is out of control, then you're going to behave in a way that signals the dog to be out of control.
Right.
But absolutely, yet people are going to critique, and they think it's all about the methodology or the leash handling. And sometimes it has nothing to do with that. Sometimes it simply has to do with how the handler is behaving.
110%. And I mean, I don't want to say confidence is all of it, necessarily, but like yesterday, we were working with the police department in Virginia. And then afterwards I had a client from a couple years ago say, hey, all of a sudden this dog has started lunging and snapping and biting and barking at other dogs that we walk past on a walk. And I was like, all right. So I go over there. One, they haven't really kept up with utilizing the tools that I left last time. So I introduced them to a prong collar, how to appropriately use it. And then we walked around the neighborhood. And even though we hadn't applied a correction with the tool yet, so the dog hadn't felt the prong collar, just the simple fact that I was on the leash and the dog understood the relationship that we had and the confidence that I held that leash with, and understanding that, like, I remember this guy and I wasn't allowed to act certain ways with this guy, and communication was clear with this guy, expectations are always consistent with this guy, then we walked around the block without a single issue, and I didn't even have to correct the dog. You know what I mean? And that's to your point, but there, you have to understand everybody's on a different level of education with that.
Yep.
You know? So that's why it just drives me nuts. Like, I love dogs, but I think honestly a bigger passion of mine is teaching people how to work with dogs.
Yeah.
And as much as I joke about, like, I work with dogs because I hate people, like, I enjoy passionate people sharing in my passion. It makes me feel connected. It makes me feel linked, right? So if you really show me that you have a give a shit about this trade, I will pour my heart and soul and give you the shirt off my back, and we'll work dogs until we're blue in the face. But it's because I want to see you be successful. And if there's something I don't know how to do, I'm not going to blow smoke up your skirt. I will tell you, like, I don't know. I've never done that before, right? Mm-hmm. Like hunting dogs. I understand detection, is odor, is tracking, is this and that and the other. And I understand upland hunting, like, but I don't know how to train a pointer to point. I'll be the first to tell you. You know what I mean? I don't know how to teach a flusher to flush, you know? So, I wish everybody would, like, calmate, just calm down a little bit. Like, we're all here for the same thing. We love dogs. Yeah. We freaking, you know, we want to be productive members of society and help people out with their troubled pets or their aggressive pets, or help make a dog that's going to bring home a soldier or a police officer. So, you know, all of this Facebookery is just getting out of control, man.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I posted a video on one out technique, and the main point was staying calm rather than doing the compulsion type method of screaming and yelling and correcting, simply because in what I was proposing is the science says that dogs modify their behavior based on our behavior. So if we've trained the dog to fight harder when the decoy is thrashing and yelling and screaming, why would we want to do the same thing? We just told the dog, we want you to fight harder when this happens. Now you as the handler, you're doing the same thing that the decoy's doing. So my whole point was just calm down. If you're going to give the dog a correction, make them very slow, so that way the dog can come to realizations instead of the fast, nine, boom. Oh my God, dude, I got a lot of backlash off that video. So what I did is I pulled it down. I made some phone calls to some of the people that were commenting, and I explained it to them. And they're like, well, now that you explained it more, that makes more sense. I still prefer a different way,
but
it makes sense now. So I think when people post videos, it's hard to see what they really mean.
Well, it's because they only perceive to their level of education.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you can only see the lens, or you can only see the world through your lens. And that's where I think a lot of people don't have that, whatever you want to call it, mental switch like you do. You got into psychology because you wanted the why. Like, why? And then when you figure out that why does that, you're that kid that's like, we got to go to the store. Why? Well, we got to get food. Why? Well, because we need to eat. Why? Well, because if we don't, we die. Why? You know what I mean? And you just go down that road. So, you know, I think it's when you post an out video, and you know how hot topic and out is in the industry, right? Everybody's got the next best thing or whatever else. But again, they're going to just comment based off of their own perception instead of stopping and asking why. And I think that's a huge part of it. Like, I'm trying to inflict my interpretation of how a dog should understand what I'm doing to it versus asking, well, how does the dog perceive what I'm doing to it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think that's a huge issue. And don't get me wrong, I've had plenty of dogs. I'll be the first to admit, I've had plenty of dogs where I get frustrated or angry or mad, or, you know, and then I stop thinking from the dog's point of view. And I don't mean that anthropomorphically. I mean that genuinely, trying to say, like, you know, dissecting my behaviors from that dog's point of view to see if what I'm doing makes sense to that dog.
Right.
But I try my damnedest. Like, when I get to that point, hey buddy, go back in the kennel. I need to cool out. I need to figure out my shit. I need to reset. I'll go have a beer. I'll go read a book. I'll go take a shower and we'll try again tomorrow. Yeah. But I think, and that's where everybody pops off on the comments section. It's because you see something and you only perceive it through your lens. So it doesn't fit. It's not in my box. So it must be bullshit. It must be, you know, snake oil salesman stuff. It must be this, that, or the other. And yes, sometimes it is, but a majority of the times it's just clickbait, man. It's just,
yeah. It's well, and in one of my classes, we were talking about communication and how body language and verbal communication is ambiguous, meaning the meaning changes. And I remembered hearing this comedian a while back. He was talking about driving down these suburban neighborhoods, and he sees a sign that says, "Slow children playing." He goes, "So is it slow children are playing, or slowly the children are playing,
or drive slow
because children are playing?" He goes, "I don't know which one to choose."
Yep.
And then he had this whole, you know, comedic bit based on that, but it's true. It's no different than a wave. A wave could mean I'm hailing a cab. It could mean hi. It could mean goodbye. It could mean watch your step. You're about ready to trip. Hey, calm down.
Yeah.
So we see these videos or these comments where people are, I believe most trainers and handlers are putting their stuff out there because they're passionate about what they do and they really want to share with what they believe is their family, and then to get met with such harsh criticism. And that's the whole point in us having this conversation. Yeah. Why can't we learn to calm down and say, maybe I'm a little confused at what you're getting at, because basically how I'm interpreting your video or your comment, it doesn't make sense to me. And I feel that it should be done this way. And then give the other person a chance to say, well, no, that's not really what I meant.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's enough of that going on. I just think it's, nope, that offended me because that's not how I've been trained and my way is the best. And that gets into that confirmation bias, which is a very interesting topic. I mean, again, my social psychology book says it's, the tendency to engage in a search strategy that confirms rather than disconfirms our own hypotheses. So in other words, we're only gonna, we'll find a piece of scientific research, even though let's say someone's method is just complete bullshit. They'll read through an entire scientific study that actually discredits that, but they'll only pull out the sentences that actually supports that.
110%.
And it's an interesting phenomenon, and we all do it.
It's not just dog training, but I think that's just, you know, your subconscious desire for social acceptance as well. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying. You may call me out on my bullshit, but like, here's an arbitrary third party that I can cite specific places that now looks like they agree with me and gives me credibility. So,
right.
You know, I think social acceptance and, I don't know. I really don't know what this social media phenomenon. And again, it's not just dog training. I mean, you scroll through Facebook, how many political posts are there? The COVID stuff, like everybody's posting something and then people just shit on it all over the place. And it's like, I mean, I don't know, Mark Zuckerberg, good for you with this whole thing and how rich and crazy, but like, I would like to genuinely believe that his genuine in his heart of hearts intention for creating this social media platform wasn't for this. It was to connect people together that couldn't be together. You know what I mean? Yeah. And to share information and to grow better. And yes, that's maybe a very utopic way of looking things, but that's what I would like to believe. And I feel like it's vastly on the other end of the spectrum, you know? And to be honest with you, I know tons of great trainers that fall victim to that idea or that premise. And so they in turn don't feel as comfortable sharing things online. And I feel like a lot of people could benefit and learn from them, but because they're so maybe a little bit more introverted and they're so scared of, you know, social criticism that like they don't post their stuff. They don't market that they're going to do a seminar online and bring people in from the outside just because of the, the baseline that we've set, even within the microcosm of our dog training community. You know what I mean? It's such a, for no pun intended, dog eat dog world out there.
That's right.
And there's literally enough food for everybody to eat. There's dogs are always going to be needed, well, SEAL Team 6 dog or whatever else. And it's like everybody has their lane and their niche and they can share and overlap and whatever else. But people are so just stuck on beating the next person down to make them look better, as opposed to, hey, let's all learn. Let's all be here, you know, for you know, the progression of our craft and our trade. You know what I mean?
Well, so, and I think too that, you know, we talk about the word ego. And so many people are led to believe that that is such a negative thing. Like, oh, if I have ego, that's bad. No, it's not bad.
Right.
That's part of being human. We all want to feel like we have purpose. We all want to feel like we have some importance. It's part of our value in this world. I mean, nobody wants to live thinking that they're pointless.
Right.
Those people that do have depression, they have I experienced that with post-traumatic stress. Well,
right.
Out loud, I'm not a sniper anymore. I'm not in law enforcement anymore. What good am I in this world? What do I have to offer? And I can tell you, in the beginning, my wife, she said, what do you want to do with yourself? You know, because I'm 100% service connected. And I'm like, well, I definitely want to finish my degree in psychology. She said, do you still want to do anything with dogs? Because I sold my kennels to my ex. And I really wanted to focus more on the psychology and teaching people. And my first few videos that I put out, let me tell you, this is not easy to sit in front of a camera alone by yourself and try to speak your thoughts alone. That's hard. In a conversation, your body language and your tone of voice and your comments are triggering more emotions and comments in me, and it flows together nicely. But when you're by yourself trying to get a point, it sounds great in your head. But then when people watch it, they're like, well, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. And I can tell you, it took a lot for me to shoot another video after some of the videos where I got reprimanded by other people when they didn't understand what I was really getting at.
Right.
The only thing that saved me was actually having the guts to message these people and say, hey, can I have a conversation with you? And they were nice enough to do it. And then once I was able to explain, then they said, well, that makes more sense. So my point is, when you start putting videos and comments out there, sometimes you think it's sounding crystal clear, but it's not in some cases. And it really takes trial and error. It takes practice to get good at getting on video or, you know, typing your thoughts out. I struggle with that. I struggle with putting my emotions down on paper. Heck, I struggle just talking about my emotions in some cases.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of people that are scared to give their two cents in fear of other people's egos, really.
Yeah, no, 110%. You know, and I find myself all the time, like, going through comments on some of these, like, law enforcement pages and everything else, where maybe a handler has a very specific question about their dog and seeking advice. And, you know, I watch the comments, and it goes from being helpful to, like, being just a combative between the people offering the advice. And, you know, that poor handler, he may be very young and impressionable. How long has he been on a leash? And now he sees, like, this is the community that he's going to be involved with. Like, do you think he's, even though none of it may be geared towards him or her, I guarantee you he's probably a lot less likely to come to this page again and ask for help or ask for guidance when, you know, we can't even get all our and trust me. So we're in the process of putting together for Parabellum our POI, right? For our basic handlers, advanced handlers, and trainers course and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if you've ever been through the curriculum development process, but it's nauseating. It's long and boring and whatever else. The problem is I tell this to a lot of people that I train with. I've never been more confident than when I was a Marine, right? Because you always had commander's intent. You know, if all else fails, just follow that. I know if I have a type one stoppage on my M4, tap, rack, bang. I'll feel a mushy trigger. I'll hear the click. It doesn't matter if my M4, your M4, anybody else's M4, or M16 for that matter, or IAR for that matter, right? So just going on that fact of, like, there are definites in our world. And now, you know, I'm in a job where every living creature I touch is completely asymmetrical to the next. And what I did with this dog, even though it's the brother of this dog from the same litter and they're the same age and they both have the same level of food drive, like I can't do this with this dog with food because he values it too much and his thalamus takes over and now I can't get him to connect the dots for this behavior. And so writing a POI, and this is from, if you're coming in as a student, something to understand as well. Dudes we've put together, there's about five of us. We all come from very diverse backgrounds when it comes to training dogs, but fundamentally we all abide by the same principle, right? So I can come up with a POI for a school, but now let's say you're one of my instructors and you have five or six handlers with five or six dogs ranging from shepherds to dutchies to labs, and we're working a detection portion of the class. Are you going to be able to stick to one methodology for every single one of those dogs and just like repetitiously beat it into their heads until all dogs are performing exactly the same and expect to get done in the 9, 12, 14 week course? Absolutely not, right? Mm-hmm. So there has to be a level of deviation. You can't come up with one single methodology. Randy Hair boxes aren't the best thing in the world. Kenny Licklider's four box protocol method isn't going to work on every single dog. There's too little titration with this dog, so I can't physically manipulate him into a final response with a sit. And there's just so many different things and variables that you have to be open-minded, in my opinion, to get anywhere.
Right.
And, you know, I really wish people would understand that, like, hey, it's a complicated task. When you're dealing with something that has a brain and you're trying to talk about getting behaviors out of that person, right. For me to inject a stimulus and to get a certain response so that dog can get a reward that I perceive it values, you know what I mean? And so I think that's the hardest part for me right now is like, man, we got to put together a POI. Like, where the hell do we start? Because every dog work is a little bit different. And so how do I, as a professional canine trainer company, how do I go in front of a bunch of officers or a bunch of soldiers or Marines and say, hey, this is our plan for the day. This is how we're going to execute things. And then I break them up in their subgroups with their individual instructors. And one instructor is saying to do it this way. And this instructor is saying to do it this way. How do I look like a cohesive business where everybody's on the same page? Because that's not what we deal with, right? Right. And it very well can be that this instructor is saying the complete opposite of this instructor. Because like you said, with, you know, social mirroring and everything else, maybe he has a group of really hard meat eaters and he's telling them that they all need to talk more like ballerinas versus this one that's got all the soft-handed introverted people and they just need to be a little bit more decisive with their dogs and their actions. You know what I mean? So it's a really hard, and then you have, I think, the outliers where it's like, it's just fucking dogs, man. Just pull the leash and say sit and the dog's going to sit. You know what I mean? That's like, you're over fucking thinking everything. It doesn't have to be about science and, you know, rover trips to Mars and blah, blah, blah. It's like, all right, I get that too. So it's complicated, man. And I don't think, you know, even if I do this until I'm 65, 75, like Pat Mullen, like I know Pat's still learning, you know what I mean? And he's been doing this crap for forever at the highest levels. But when you talk to Pat, he never comes off as the dude that knows everything. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, that's what I aspire to be. And when, I don't know how to explain it, but when Pat specifically, like you ask him a question and he's just like, it lends him credibility.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I feel like, cool, I'm learning from the right dude right now. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so hopefully, however the POI thing plans out, I hope that that's projected on our future students and our future, you know, law enforcement officers of, hey, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. Welcome to trying to slay the dragon, man. It's going to be a lifelong journey and you're never going to have it. And the next dog you get could be 180 degrees from the one that you had in the back of your cruiser right now, but we're in it together and we'll be here as a reference tool. And if some shit goes sideways and it doesn't work, call us. We'll figure it out together, you know? And I think that's what a lot of the community lacks is the sense of community. We're allowed to screw up. It's okay.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't need to bash on each other for doing it.
Right.
Everything is a teachable moment, you know, like, and this is the funny part. I don't know where in your psychology genius brain this fits in, but it's like from the pet dog side of things, I don't know if you ever had the displeasure of pet dogs, but we'll have like pet dog clients where their children are just some of the most well-behaved kids, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And, you know, they sit down and they listen and they pay attention to while I'm giving a lesson, and their pleases and thank yous. And can I be excused to use the restroom? Just like awesome kids. And then their dog is a complete mess because they don't just apply the same clear rules and expectations that they do with their kids of utilizing the quadrants and essentially with their own children, but they won't do that with their dog. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, whatever it is, they just don't feel like it's okay to pop the leash when the dog does something wrong or withhold food from the dog because it didn't exhibit what it was supposed to exhibit or so on and so forth. And it's like, if you can raise good kids, you should be able to train a decent dog. It's really no different, right? It's about balance. And it baffles me, like where in the human brain do you like make that delineation of, I can do that with them, but I can't do that with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and that's, I did an interview with Dr. Caleb Black from, he's a clinical psychologist at the University of Central Oklahoma. I found him by watching this documentary on Amazon Prime called Reasons to Believe. Phenomenal, phenomenal documentary. I recommend that everybody watches it because they dive into the human belief system. And that's really what we're battling here. And that's exactly what we're talking about. One person believes that their way is the best and no one else has any credibility in their mind. That's what they believe. Well, your beliefs create action and behavior. So then that's going to affect the way that you even speak to another human being. And we tend to lose that sense of compassion because our beliefs are so strong. But that doesn't mean that our beliefs are right. In fact, a lot of neuroscientists say that 80% of what we believe to be true as adults is actually false. Only 20% of how we interpret the world is actually truth.
That doesn't surprise me.
Not at all. Not at all. And I think that's the whole point in today's interview today is to say, hey, man, if you're going to be on these chat sites, have a little compassion. It's okay to ask questions. And if you're confused at what the person's getting at, find a way to put your two cents in a respectful, loving manner, rather than just being a jerk about it.
110%.
You know, like,
I don't think nobody learns like that, in my opinion.
Well, and that's why I like to do these, because I really want to educate people that, you know, human beings are smarter than what we give them credit for. And just because you don't like what you see doesn't mean that was the true intention of the person creating the message.
Yeah.
So for all you viewers and listeners out there, that's the point that Mount and I are trying to make. People are going to post their dog training videos or their deployment videos, and they're going to want to get advice from other people. So have a little compassion. And not one tool is going to work for every dog. And hey, Mountain, I'm sure you've seen this before too. I've had handlers that I trained, and I used specific techniques to get the job done. Then when they came to my academy, I showed them those exact same techniques. Those techniques worked for like 2 years. Then all of a sudden, the dog had a bad experience on a deployment in real life, and those techniques no longer worked. So then I had to get creative. And if I had such a closed mind, I wouldn't have been able to fix their problem.
Yeah. I think that's the measure of a good trainer too. Like, when nobody's around, you don't have a reference, and you have a problem that you haven't encountered before, do you get creative? Like, or do you just say, well, I'm going to put them away and I'll just try the same thing again in an hour and see if it sticks then or tomorrow, or maybe my session just wasn't long enough. And it's like, no, look, I mean, if I know dogs, just like humans, everyone has different levels of intelligence, attention span, everything else. But I mean, there's definitely a point where you get a comfortability of knowing like, okay, at this point or after this many repetitions, I should roughly be in this general area of results. You know what I mean? And if you're not, like, stop, rethink it. It doesn't matter if it means I got to put on a tutu and some lipstick. Like, I'll do that if it's going to get the dog to exhibit the behavior I'm trying to do, but you can't always just get stuck with it. And the idea that dog training hasn't really changed over the last 70, 80 years, it's true, but it doesn't mean that there's not a new way to teach a sit. It's still probably going to fall somewhere, whether it's in the classical conditioning scope or the operant conditioning scope, but it may be a new way of applying that to a dog that you haven't thought of before. And that's what I honestly encourage most people to do is, you know, go with a dog that's a little outside your comfort zone, yeah. Right? Like, yeah, I can deal with ass eaters all day long and I can get bit up all day long, but you give me that nervous, scared, shy little lab or golden that's like, you know, screaming because it saw its shadow, like that's a whole different 180 degrees on the spectrum of what I'm used to. And so like, I have to think outside the box. I have to figure out, okay, well, how will you start to desensitize this dog? What does it mean to build confidence in a dog? How the hell do I build confidence in a dog that looks like it would rather just be dead than be, you know, be working with me?
Right.
I can't get this dog to look at me and I can't get this dog to eat from my hand. Like, okay, go through everything you know how to do. And then once you've reached the edge of that, figure it out. Try something new, right? And I always find that, to be honest with you, not saying that it, in the sense of like it's I'm such an amazing trainer or anything else, but like I feel I always do better when I don't necessarily have outside influence, right? Like I'm at a level in my training where I feel pretty comfortable and confident with what I know and how to manipulate certain behaviors and things like that. But it's like when I get to the end of that threshold, instead of relying on somebody else to tell me something or to just give, essentially instead of, you know, giving a man a fish, teaching him how to fish kind of thing, right. But it's with myself, you know what I mean? And that's when I come up with some of my more creative ideas or, you know, I have some of my bigger breakthroughs with a dog. It's just like, all right, dude, we're both just as lost. You don't know what I want from you. I don't know how to communicate it to you. Like, let's just dial this shit back and reassess the whole situation.
Right.
And I think people are scared of that, you know, and especially if they do figure something else out and say they catch it on video and then they post it on Facebook and then this happens. And you know what I mean? It's like, well, now we all missed out on this awesome experience this trainer had because yep. somebody wanted to call them an asshole or a snake oil salesman or whatever else.
Right.
And I think honestly, more than anything, I would consider myself a student of life. I would just like to know, like, hey, why is that girl such an asshole? Why is that dude so scared to, you know, just go to the beach and take his shirt off and spend time with his family because he has self-image issues? Why is this dog so aggressive when the family he's with seems so nice and like they've done everything right his entire upbringing? Like, I like studying life, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of us kind of lose track in that. We get so wrapped up in a instant gratification, we've got to deliver a product, the dog has to be done by this day kind of thing, that we don't take the time to learn with every dog. And every dog will teach you something if you stop and you listen.
That's right. You know? Yep.
So
no, I think I really am inspired by your mindset with this. And I really hope that today's interview will inspire other people to start just calming down. I think so many people are afraid that what they've believed their entire life in regards to dog training could be wrong. And that's unnerving. It really is. When I first started studying psychology and I realized that our brains give us magic tricks all the time. The moment we think we know where the card's at, it's not actually there at all.
Right.
And even as I'm going through my therapy and through VA for my PTSD, I'm learning that no, some of my mental issues are not because of what I thought they were. It was something completely different that I never even thought about, but it took me calming down and listening, you know, for like, there was maybe a 5 to 10 year period where I was resistant. And so, you know, my therapists were telling me, hey, I really believe this is the issue. And I'm like, nope, couldn't be that. And I wasn't growing. I wasn't getting better because my ego was involved. I was certain that I knew the answer. And it turns out I was wrong the entire time. And that's when I really started opening up. So I really just appreciate where your mind's at. I understand this isn't, for some of you listeners, I know this could turn into be a very controversial interview, but what Mountain and I are talking about, we're not trying to tear you down. We're literally just trying to create a sense of empathy, a sense of compassion, and maybe we can start improving on our social media etiquette. And to just consider some of these different facts that sometimes we are driven by ego. Sometimes we fear being wrong. We fear that what we've always known to be true could be wrong. And so therefore we got to get defensive. You know, if you have an open mind, there's no need to get defensive. There's really not. I've learned to be okay being wrong. And I'm fine with that. In fact, Dr. Lack, when I did his interview, he goes, well, sometimes I prove myself wrong. Sometimes I believe that's what a hypothesis is. You believe that this is the way, you do your research. And he goes, I've proven myself wrong a lot. He goes, but you know what that means to me? I said, how does that make you feel when you prove yourself wrong? He said, good, because why do I want to keep believing in something that's not true? I would rather prove myself wrong so that I can grow and be smarter. And I was really inspired by that. I have so much respect for Dr. Lack in bringing this education to people. So I think that's what you're getting at as well.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, what you're doing and like what Cameron Ford does out there with Silver State and all, you know, the experiments he's running with the universities and everything of canine cognition, like that intrigues me because I've never done things through to that level of understanding a dog. It's mostly been through experience, like you were talking before. Okay, trial and error. This didn't work, this worked. This guy told me that this thing works and it did for so many dogs. And now here's the speed bump. Like, how do I get over it? And so, you know, and I think, first of all, the discipline of dog training as a whole, from obedience to detection, protection, sport dog, hunting dog, hawk dogs, whatever, like there will never be one person that just knows it all to the nth degree. You know what I mean? So if you're just constantly a student of your craft, I think if you get to a place where you're comfortable producing a dog in this discipline, it's probably time that you try to figure out how to get into a different discipline, because it could have some crossover and it could help you in the discipline you thought you were confident in. And you realize like, oh man, there are a lot of holes in what I was doing because, you know, this transfers here and transfers there. So that's, like I said, being a student of life, and I'm very much a student of this. And that's honestly what intrigued me a lot about you and coming on the show, is you're pursuing that next level of what I would like to do, which is to learn like, hey, how does the brain really work? How do you spell thalamus? Like, what does it do? You know what I mean? And understanding how that is, those parts of the brain are affected from a chemical and biological standpoint when something is introduced to a dog. Well, what does that mean for my terminal behavior that I'm trying to get to? Like, how does that mess up my successive approximation? Do I have to take something out? Is there something that's missing? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I've got to figure that out. And I think and that's with everything. You know what I mean? Like, your truck's going to last a lot longer if you're a mechanic versus if you're just Joe Schmo that likes to play video games all day long. You know what I mean? Right. You've got a mechanical engineering brain. You know, your oil needs to be changed. You know, your coolant's got to be changed, all this stuff. You've got to maintain the car. So, you know, I just think that you'll be more successful the more you try to go out there and learn. But again, it's about having a conducive atmosphere to learning. And if we're all online bashing each other every time a 30-second video clip goes up, like, how are we going to progress as an industry?
Right.
When is the next big thing going to, who's going to share the freaking breakthrough of, dude, I learned that I could put this on a dog and push a button, and I've never said sit or applied leash pressure or touch a dog's butt. I just push this button and the dog sits because we did the research. We learned where to the brain and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's never going to get there and be shared if we're just constantly creating this, you know, poisonous atmosphere for people in our profession.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I think it's really shutting a lot of good people out that could really bring stuff to the table. And the more I study cognitive psychology in humans and dogs, the more I realize that that is really exactly what you just explained. It's phenomenal. We're never going to know enough because science is always changing. Where there's more experiments done. I think what Cameron Ford's doing out there at the Cognition Center is phenomenal. Because I think we need more of that. Look at, I interviewed neuroscientist Dr. Greg Burns for an article I was writing for a Police Canine magazine. And he trained a bunch of dogs to lay calmly in an MRI machine with no sedation, no restraint.
Yeah.
And he was able to capture live images of the caudate nucleus, which is the reward center of the brain. Does it fire brighter under these conditions compared to these conditions? And so now we had scientific data, you know, and as we were talking before we closed this interview down, you know, we talked a little bit about science versus experience. I believe, and this is my own opinion, but I believe a good trainer or a good handler or a good pet dog owner, even at that, should start with understanding some of the cognitive science first. And then say, okay, now that I know what the caudate nucleus does in the prefrontal cortex and the thalamus, let me try this technique that I got from another person and see if that doesn't work. Now you first looked at the science to determine how information is processed through the brain. Then you try a specific technique. If it made the behavior worse, then go into your toolbox, grab a different tool. And if you see improvement, now you say, okay, now there's correlation between the science and this technique. Now you can go off experience.
Yeah.
But it takes looking at the science first. So I don't want to give the impression that you and I are talking about completely excluding experience. I just need to look at the science first and then pick what tool you want to use based on that information and that knowledge.
And here's a little brain tickler for you while you're saying that. Experience, though, if somebody does experience, you talk about utilizing experience, they're classically conditioning themselves to shut themselves off to science.
True.
Does that make sense? Right? So like if I'm doing these things and I'm constantly getting the product I want, then who the hell needs science? Why do I need to learn that when I turn the key, it puts fuel and then there's a spark and combustion and it's captured and turned into energy, you know what I mean? Like to make the car move. So it's kind of a catch 22 for people that believe in that sense, because science is conditioning them to not believe in science. You know what I mean? Which is a freaky thought, but
that's actually a really good point though. And I'm glad you brought that up because you're right. And again, that goes into that like confirmation bias and into all the other biases that we see in cognitive psychology. Yeah, I agree with you. And that's another reason why I like to do these interviews, because I want people to hear from other trainers, not just me, to say, hey, what you're saying, I do see in my own business, in my own area of this industry.
Yeah.
But now that you mentioned that, now I can see that taking place. I knew how to describe it, but I didn't know that was actually studied scientifically, for example. Or when I pull up my social psychology book, I talk to a lot of trainers, they're like, oh, I've known that for years, but I didn't know that was actually a part of the cognitive psychology curriculum. Oh yeah, it's been proven and we've known this for like 100 years, and then they feel more confident. Oh, so what I was believing was true. Yeah, it was true.
And it's funny, like, do you know what my biggest criteria for hiring a trainer is? It's not their experience or how many combat deployments or how many dogs they've had in the back of their cruiser. It's that open mindset. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want you to think that because I'm, I guess, technically your boss, which I hate that term, but like that the what I say is the New and Old Testament, and this is the only thing you can do. I want to be questioned by my trainers. I want them, if they see me doing something fucked up with a dog, like, hey, call me on my bullshit. Keep me in check. And as long as we all have an open mind and we're all willing to learn and grow together, I think that's what's going to make everybody successful. And I'll say this from, you know, the pet dog side of our things. We've only been in operation for 7 months and we're booming, you know what I mean? And we're having huge outreach within our community because of the level of care that they take with each individual dog. And, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say, like, if I sign up a dog for a 2-week program, I'm not going to wait till day 12 to ask for another week. If I know that as an experienced dog trainer, you're going to know that within the first few days of having the dog, right? And so, you know, I tell all of my trainers, like, listen, if you get that dog and we did the assessment and we just thought that you could do it in 3 weeks and you get the dog and you need 5 weeks, tell me in the first week, I'm going to pay you for a 5-week board and train, but you're going to keep that dog at no extra charge to the client. You know what I mean? Because that's just the right thing to do. And I'm not going to overpressure a dog into doing something based off of maybe your lack of experience as a trainer or that dog's temperament or the owner's financial, you know, abilities. So I think for me and my company and what we're building both on pets and both on working dogs, like, that's what I want in a trainer. I want a trainer who has an open mind and understands that even when they're watching somebody who's doing the blatant wrong thing to do, that they still view that as a learning opportunity of what not to do with a dog versus a bashing opportunity to boost their own ego.
Right.
And I've found that to be a pretty successful business model when looking for trainers.
Yeah. So. And I would agree with you. And that's exactly how I ran my kennels too. It to a T. That meant a lot to people because I was humble enough to say, hey, man, I thought I can get this done in X amount of time, but holy moly, your dog is really pushing the boundaries here. I'm really having to use a lot of different techniques to get through to your specific dog. And they really appreciated that. And so I think what you guys are doing over there at Parabellum Canine is pretty awesome. And I really love your mindset that you have going on. And I really think you can inspire a lot of people to just calm down, man. We're all supposed to be family. Let's start treating each other with a little bit more respect. And look, I say stupid shit all the time. Talk to my wife. In fact, I told her I was going to make a shirt that says sometimes I'm dumb. Because sometimes I say and do dumb things. But does that mean I want her to love me less or to treat me like I'm broken or messed up? No. I want her to still be compassionate towards me and have a level of empathy. And she does that all the time, which is why she's pretty amazing. But it makes me want to interact with her more. It makes me want to know her on a more deep, intimate level. Well, why can't we do that amongst each other in the canine industry? Why can't we understand that, hey, sometimes people say dumb things. Maybe it sounded good in their brain, but I have a lot of questions. And if you would just formulate your question with more empathy and compassion and respect, then chances are that person is going to have the courage to respond and break it down a little bit further.
Right.
Maybe we did misinterpret the video or the comment. Maybe we did. Right. Hey, I've put a few videos out there where I got a lot of backlash.
Yeah, I get it, man. I get it. And that's not what it's supposed to be about. So
that's right.
Hopefully, you know, people, I mean, we literally, this relationship spawned from a moment of conflict. You know what I mean? Yeah, and
that's right.
This is what happens when you're open to dialogue, when you're to somebody else's interpretation of the same thing. And it doesn't mean I have to accept your viewpoint, but if I can at least have a dialogue about it, why not? Because not only am I going to learn something about you, I'll probably end up learning something about myself as well. So
yeah. Well, and that's something that I tell my wife too. I'm like, you know, it's okay if we disagree. We don't have to believe in the same thing. You're entitled to your own belief. Whether I agree with it or not, I can't behave in a way that makes you believe that I love you less because you don't see it my way.
Absolutely.
And I think we need to bring that into this industry more and more and more because there's too much division. And I'm okay with not agreeing with you. You and I, we're still going to be brothers no matter what. I mean, specifically because of the Marine Corps, but it's okay that we don't see eye to eye on everything. I can still love you like a brother. I can still show you respect and let you believe how you want to believe.
We need to come up with like a canine Woodstock, man, and just start this shit all over, you know?
Yeah, totally, brother.
Let's all go out there, get some grips, you know, have some beers, have some fun and learn.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Mountain, listen, I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for your inspiration. And definitely thank you for your time and conducting this interview with me.
I really appreciate it, man. It's been fun. And hopefully, you know, we'll continue to talk offline and both help each other grow. So
yeah. Now, what city are you in Virginia so people can find
you? I'm in Hampton, Virginia, but we're getting ready to purchase some land, which we haven't really figured out where we're going to be, but we will still stay in the state of Virginia.
Okay.
So Parabellum K9's headquarters will be located somewhere in the state of VA.
Okay. And then what I'll do is I'm going to put a link to, do you guys have a website or a Facebook
page? Yeah, we have a Facebook page. We're in the process of redoing our website right now. But yeah, we do. And I'll send all that information to you.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and post the link to Parabellum's Facebook page. So if you're in the area or if you're with a police department and you guys are on the market for a dog, check out Parabellum K9, give Mountain here a phone call, talk to him. He'll be very honest with you and open as I've experienced with him. So reach out to Parabellum K9. They're doing some great work out there. And again, Mountain, thanks for your time, buddy.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, everybody. Till next time, stay safe, watch your six, and as always, Semper Fi.